Hello and welcome to SwissInfo.ch's physically and mentally challenging programme for July the 20th. I'm Thomas Stevens.
All the best players are men and lots of people ask why.
Later, we discover why women are dealt worse cards than men when it comes to representing Switzerland at bridge. But first, we strap on our crampons and head to the fearsome Eiger. The 1,800-metre wall that towers over the Swiss resort of Grindelwald in Canton Bern has been the scene of so much drama over the years that it long ago passed into the realms of myth and Hollywood, for example in Clint Eastwood's 1975 film The Eiger Sanction and the German hit Nordwand, North Face, in 2008. The west flank of the Eiger wasn't so difficult. A team of climbers reached the summit in 1858, but it took another 80 years before anyone made it up the North Face. At least 9 people died trying in the 3 years before a team made it to the top on July the 24th, 1938. SwissInfo's Susan Vogel-Messika recently joined a group of elite alpinists who are marking the 75th anniversary. Now, Susan, disappointingly, you didn't actually climb the North Face of the Eiger. What did you do?
What I did, I put on my hiking boots and I joined a group of other journalists and as well as these elite alpinists and some mountain guides. And we took a short, easy walk, actually. Fairly easy. We had to go over this hump of snow, sort of like a dune of snow. Half the people went over that. The other half went under the nice sort of clean route. And I remember my fingers were burning afterwards because I'd been clawing my way into this wall of snow. But you know, I make it sound very dramatic. Probably for the alpinists, it was quite a boring walk.
And why were you all there?
Basically, we were there to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the first time that people successfully managed to climb the Eiger North Face. Now, this wasn't the first time Eiger had been conquered, but previously they'd only done it via the west flank, and that's much easier. So 75 years ago, it was 1938, late August, the team needed 4 days nearly to get up the mountain. They finally made it on July 24th. It was 2 Germans and 2 Austrians. And so we were basically celebrating this feat, but also honoring the people who had died trying. And there have been at least 64 over the years who have lost their lives trying to get up the sheer face of the Eiger.
4 days, that does seem very slow, doesn't it? I mean, nowadays yeah. they can scuttle up it in...
in about 2.5 hours. Yeah. Uli Steck, now he managed to do it in about 2.75 hours. That was the record. Then he was beaten by Donny Arnold, who did it in about 2.5 hours or just under.
And they're both Swiss.
They're both Swiss. But it's interesting, the topic of competition among the alpinists did come up on the day. And really, none of them wanted to admit that this was a theme. Really, they all were saying how it's more important to be safe. Of course, you want to do a good job, you want to be quick, but it's not about being the fastest guy. And if you misstep by, say, just 2 centimeters, it could be over. You're going to join the 64 who died.
Be number 65.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, you were there looking up at the North Face. What was it like? I mean, does it have a sort of aura for these climbers?
I think it has an aura for everybody. This is a mountain that actually I've always liked. I can remember on other trips in the area seeing that face and finding it so beautiful. Unfortunately, on the day for this event, it was really shrouded in a lot of mist. And I was able to ask alpinist Stefan Sigrist how often it was like that.
It's actually quite often. In summer times, you get kind of clouds moving up. Then they condensate inside there. And yeah, even often have snowfall on that time, which is hard to believe if you are down here with the nice weather.
And for you, what's the fascination with the Eiger North Face?
Yeah, just only to look at it is a nice mountain, in my opinion. And then, sure, there is like the height. You have 1,600 meters to climb. Then there's the difficulties you have, different climbs, let's say sport climbing. There is in now up to the some of the highest, hardest grades. And also the classic route where we talk about now, the 75 years of the first ascensionists, is like a big mountaineering adventure.
And why is it that in the old days it took 1 to 3 days to get up there, and today people can do it in half a day or 3 hours?
Yeah, it has to do with the material first. Second, the knowledge now is big where the route goes, where what you have to follow, And people also know the conditions, so you know exactly if there were other people in before you have tracks, then you hear how the conditions are, and then you have a good chance to go for a record.
But how many times have you climbed?
29 times.
The next one is number 30. That's sort of special as well. So what do you have in mind for your 30th ascent?
Actually, I don't go for the number, really. But yeah, let's see what's coming up. I didn't know that I was guiding in April, last April, 29th time. But before, I wasn't sure if I going to do the classic route again. Could be the classic or another climb. We'll see.
And when you get to the top, what's the first thing that you normally do?
The first thing is we congratulate each other, and then normally we have a sip of drink, eat something, enjoy the scenery, and then soon it's time to go for the descent.
Before your muscles are too cold, huh?
Yeah, or the weather is going to change, yeah.
So it's popular, very popular with climbers. What about tourists and non-climbers? Is it popular? You can, as I understand it, that there is a sort of like a observation bit where you can just stand at the bottom with your telescope looking at these sort of little spider men climbing up the face.
Well, yeah,
face.
And that's exactly where we were. We were at the Eiger Gletscher station. That's partway up between the Kleine Scheidegg and the Jungfraujoch. And so I'd say, yeah, it must have been about a 40-minute walk from there, not too hard. Very grassy, a lot of beautiful alpine flowers. And yeah, exactly, a great perspective to admire the North Face, as long as it's not shrouded in cloud. Something that really struck me about the alpinists was how humble and down-to-earth they were, despite the heights they've reached during their climbing careers. I guess I expected really boastful, tough guys, but they were also kind of quiet and gentle almost, and I suppose that's the kind of personality you need if you're going to work your way slowly up and down these mountains.
Or not so slowly.
Or not so slowly, as the case may be, but certainly methodically.
I mean, the scenery, these really sheer cliffs, also makes it a popular area for base jumpers, these people who basically jump off cliffs, open up a parachute, which hopefully opens.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And in fact, on the day, suddenly there was a bit of a scramble among some of the official people working there. And what we found out was that a base jumper had actually had an accident. And at first, there wasn't much information about how bad it was. And for a moment, we had to stop the program and wait while they sorted out what sort of assistance this person needed. And there was a helicopter flying in the air. And then, as it turned out, the person had only hurt his foot. And this break in the action for us meant that I had a chance to ask how a mountain rescue works. And I ended up speaking with Johan Kaufmann. He's been a mountain guide since 1999, and he's also the head of the mountain sports school in Grindelwald.
It's always first aid on the mountain before they go to hospital, because it's often the important thing just to check up what's happened and maybe to give the first medicaments or something else. And they repair the patient and then hospital, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they have also to decide if it's very serious. Sometimes they have to fly to Bern to the university hospital. Yeah. So.
In summertime, around how often is there an incident?
Yeah, it depends. During the main time between middle of July and end of August, it's quite often. So in Grindelwald, they have about, I think, 30 or 40 rescues every summer. But most of the accidents it's mostly because they have less experience. They are maybe like today, too late. If you are now up on the mushroom, it's too late because it's warm, snow gets soft, so you have rock fall, you have to be up there early in the morning. And
could you imagine changing your hiking boots for crampons and so on and making it right to the top?
I'm not really sure I've got the nerve for it. They were certainly trying to convince me to give it a go, or maybe to try something a bit easier, like trekking over glaciers. That's a bit of a slower pace and not so hardcore. But I don't know. I think even after 12 years in Switzerland, I enjoy looking at the mountains so much and just being up there, even on an easy path. I don't know if I need that adrenaline just yet.
Susan Vogel-Masika reporting from the Eiger North Face. An exhibition on the mountain's history opened earlier this month at the Grindelwald Museum. If all that leaves you a bit breathless, let's come back down to Earth and visit the mentally challenging world of International Bridge. Miriam Kuhl is a 32-year-old mother of two from Bern who has played the king of card games for Switzerland on several occasions. She started playing about 10 years ago. She signed up to a university course which was also attended by her future husband and has since gone from strength to strength. I started off by asking her what she loves so much about the game.
It's two things. First, it's the game itself, the logic. It's a lot about numbers. It's about probabilities. It's about strategy. When people ask me what is bridge, I say it's chess with cards, because it's a challenge for your brain, and that's what I love. I think it's never boring. It's always a challenge. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is the social thing behind it, because you play with a partner and against another pair. And there's a lot about table presence, about feeling what's going on, about understanding with your partner. And your partnership can grow. So that's what I love. And you start playing better together.
When Ku represents her country, for example at the European Championships, she plays in the women's team. But she still plays with her husband, himself a strong player, in other tournaments.
It wasn't easy in the beginning playing with my husband. We had a lot of fights. Now we're getting along very well. Everyone makes mistakes when playing bridge. And when you have arguments over that and then carry the arguments home, that's not good. Yeah, we had those. You are at home in bed after bridge match and you're still arguing about bridge hands. It's not good for partnership. But then it's also, I love playing with my husband and I love telling him about my bridge adventures. And if my husband did not play bridge, I could not do that and I could not share this part of my life with him.
I've actually played against Ku on a few occasions, and it's never ended well for me. Knowing that I was looking for a few tips, she explained that the secret to being a good player was focus.
You have to be able to concentrate on bridge, not only when you're at the table, but also when you're not at the table. You have to learn, to study, to practice. You can practice online quite easily. There are lots of websites to practice. You have to invest a certain amount of time. That's one thing. And then, of course, there's talent. You need to be someone who likes to work with numbers, to more like a logic person. Yeah, a certain intelligence, a fast learner that helps. A good memory, that's also an important thing. So that's. But then the focus is very important. The best players in the world are men. All the best players are men, and lots of people ask why. And that's the point with the focus, because men often have less other things like family and stuff to get together. That's my theory, but I'm quite sure that's the point. So you need to, in the time between, I say, 25 and 45, you need to go for bridge really hard to be a world-class player.
Something that, she says, isn't always possible for young women also trying to juggle a young family, she and her husband have two young sons, and a job. Kuhl works for the cantonal authority in Bern, helping with the financial and administrative side of after-school day centres, where older pupils can stay if their parents are working. Quite a challenge.
It's not easy. It's a lot of organisation. It needs both parts of the partnership, so my husband and I, to go for it. And yeah, he has to support me. I have to support him, of course. It's not a lot of sleep, a lot of organisation and some stress sometimes. Yeah.
For a more detailed portrait of Miriam Kuhl, as well as other Swiss news and views, go to swissinfo.ch. That's it for this week. To play us out, the main title theme from the 1975 film The Eiger Sanction. The soundtrack was composed by John Williams, who went on to compose the music for Star Wars and many other films. I'm Thomas Stevens.